Jay from New Jersey. It's the SNL Nerd, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
How you doing, Darren?
I'm doing good, John. Happy Valentine's Day to you and all the lovers out there in radio land.
Yeah. Happy Valentine's Day, a holiday that will be over by the time you hear this.
You know what? Yeah, as soon as I said it, I was like, oh, no, because people aren't going to be listening to this on the Sunday of Valentine's Day. They'll be afterwards.
Already. We're like a minute in, and we've already screwed up.
Wow. All right, yeah, they'll be listening to this on their iPods the days after Valentine's Day when all the chocolates are half off at your local drugstore.
Right, you know, as they're reflecting on how good / bad their Valentine's Day was. Maybe some combination of the two. We don't know. We don't know your lives.
We don't know your love life. We don't know what you're up to. We don't know if you have a mate in your life or you're just single and alone, just drinking whiskey, staring into the abyss.
Wait, is my webcam on?
What?
Wow, that's you freaking nailed that, buddy.
I didn't want to say anything, but yeah, could you just turn that off?
Okay. I'll put a post-it note over the camera.
Thank you.
All right, so. Wait, what about you? You're a married man. You got big plans?
No.
You doing a thing?
No, I mean, I got my lady love some slippers.
Nice.
You know, it's the season. And sure. Yeah, I think we're just going to, you know, chill, stay indoors, maybe order something in, maybe, you know, watch a movie and cuddle.
And enjoy each other's company.
Yeah.
Because that's what it's all about, right?
It's not about the buying of the chocolates and the candies and the flowers. Nah, man. It's about love, baby.
It's about the love. It's about the love, baby.
Yeah, right on. Solid.
We are all about the love here at the SNL Nerds.
Absolutely. You can't spell love without nerds.
And speaking of love, let's bring up this week's lovely episode of Saturday Night Live. This is season 46, episode 12 from February 13th, 2021, with Regina King hosting and Nathaniel Rateliff musical guesting. Wait, is it Rateliff or Rateliff?
I think it's Rateliff.
Rateliff. I think I misspelled it in half my notes.
Second mishap with the podcast already.
That's right. Oh.
Wow.
This is no way to run our railroad.
Yeah, no, this is, wow. We're right off the rails, right off the rails.
I wrote down Rateliff in my notes, and I'm looking at the YouTube, and yeah, it is Rateliff, but I immediately second-guessed myself as I was reading it. So it's Rateliff. Our apologies to Nathaniel Rateliff.
Yeah, apologies to them and the Night Sweats.
The Night Sweats is a weird name for a band, right?
It's kind of cool, but it's kind of weird. Like, that'd be a good name for like a punk band
I heard, you know, he was introduced for the second number of Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats. And I was like, what? His band is called the Night Sweats?
Yeah.
That is not a positive connotation.
Working on the Night Sweats.
I was hoping
to hear that.
So did you want to talk a little before we get into the show? Or should we just dive in? What do you want to do?
I think we should just dive in. I'll say everything I have to say while we go through this episode, because this episode was
Yeah. This one's gonna leave a mark, you guys.
Yeah. I mean, which it sucks. I wish it didn't. I mean, we got to be honest on this podcast. We always champion when the episodes do really well and really great, and when they don't do great, we have to call it out. And you know, it's not that we take no pleasure in saying all the negative things about an episode when they don't do well, but you know,
and this episode, I think we're going to say all the negative things. Very many negative things will be left unsaid, I think, by the time we're done.
Yeah, this episode was a bit of a boof, but let's get into it.
Okay, so starting out, we have our cold open, which is the second impeachment trial cold open, which means it was probably largely written on Saturday.
Yeah, Yeah, I can see that.
Because we didn't know how the second impeachment trial was ending until Saturday afternoon.
And this cold open really reflected that.
Yeah, yeah. So we had Alex Moffat as Tucker Carlson talking about the impeachment. He brings on Kate McKinnon as Lindsey Graham. I will say I was really impressed with the makeup job on Kate McKinnon.
Yeah, there we go. There's some positive talk. Yeah.
They made her look a lot like Lindsey Graham. And I also enjoyed the running gag of having Kate McKinnon play prominent Republicans as weird troll men.
Yes, that's a good thing.
I think that's always fun. They were talking about how, you know, because Trump was acquitted, how now the country should focus on the things that are really important, like locking up Hillary and freeing Britney Spears.
Yeah. I mean, that was just because Britney's in the news for, her dad and that court case.
Yeah, that documentary that dropped this week. I haven't watched it yet, but I might check it out.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either, but like I have, it is trending on the Twitters and what have you. So,
I hear things. Justin Timberlake, he issued an apology to Britney and to Janet Jackson.
Yeah, Miss Jackson, if you're nasty.
Perhaps he should have just called her Miss Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, I do remember, like, you know, growing up with that whole Britney Spears thing where she was in the news all the time just because she was having, like, a mental breakdown. And I don't know, I remember, like, a lot of late night talk show hosts kind of goofing on it. Even back then, I wasn't comfortable with that. I was like, this feels kind of gross. But, yeah, like, it seems like now people are sort of catching up to that. You know what was going on back then? Saying yeah, that was
like there's I and I think they use this in the Britney Spears documentary, from what I understand. Like Craig Ferguson, because when he was hosting the Late Late Show, he did this whole impromptu monologue about how he was not going to make fun of Britney Spears because she was obviously troubled and going through a tough time, and he kind of related that to his own struggles with sobriety and mental health and all that. And that's really good. You should look that up on YouTube and watch that in full. I really miss Craig Ferguson.
Yeah, guys, if you haven't seen Craig Ferguson, go back and watch him. Cause he was like the guy that was really changing late night. He was like really doing different stuff. Like everybody else back then was kind of following the same template, but he was like really taking chances. And I mean, unfortunately he never really got the props he deserved, but like he was right.
No. There's a great YouTube channel called Jay Leno Fly that has a lot of clips of Craig Ferguson, and I go to that channel quite a bit because I still miss Craig Ferguson. It's been like 5-6 years since he left the airwaves, and anyway, we should probably talk more about the cold open of SNL.
Should we? I'd rather talk about Craig Ferguson.
So would I. I'd like to, you know, maybe we should stay at least sort of focused.
All right.
So we also had A.D. Bryant as Ted Cruz, with Ted Cruz and his unfortunate beard. We had Mikey Day as we had, and then they flashed to bits of the trial, with Mikey Day as Trump lawyer Bruce Castor, Pete Davidson as I believe it was another Trump lawyer, Michael Van Verveen, which yes, they say means man of the penis.
Ha!
And they had a thing where he mispronounced the names of Kamala Harris and several other people. He says, "Did I mispronounce the names of all these women of color on purpose or out of ignorance? You'll never know." Yeah. Pete Davidson in a political sketch just seems wrong somehow.
A little bit. I mean, it's not his. I mean, I don't know if it's a strong suit, but I guess they figure throw him in there. He kind of looks like the man of the penis.
Yeah. Did you watch much or any of the impeachment trial?
No. I was like, I can't have that infect my soul. I'd rather do something that makes me feel better. So I think I just, you know, watched like a bunch of like, you know, Desus and Mero or. So, yeah, something fun or funnier to just.
Yeah, yeah. I knew it would probably get me wound up and angry, so I didn't watch much outside of like the summaries on the news.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, And let's see, we also had Beck Bennett as Foghorn Leghorn slash Mitch McConnell. I do enjoy Beck's Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, that was good. Like he had that one point where he finally let loose what he really thought of Trump, and he was like, "Oh, thank God, I was holding all that in my neck for like 4 years." Like, "Oh, hey, there are crumbs underneath my neck," or something like that. Like,
yeah, yeah, that was funny. I don't know if I agree with that take that Mitch McConnell actually dislikes Trump. I don't know.
I don't know. The man has no soul. I don't know what he likes.
Yeah, yeah. I think at best he regarded Trump as like a useful idiot.
Right. Yeah. That's that should be the title of his next memoirs. Useful.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't see Mitch McConnell having enough of a conscience to like actually dislike Trump.
Yeah. Exactly. He's a bit of a weird, angry sociopath.
But I mean, what do we think of this overall as a sketch? I was very on it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. It was like a lot of the jokes were pretty weak. I think there was like one joke where Kate as Lindsey Graham was saying, "Oh, they say he tried to attempt a coup. He did not try to attempt a coup. He is coup."
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
It was like a lot of these jokes were, it was pretty, I don't know, this cold open was like pretty unmemorable.
Now, granted, I only watched this episode once. There was only one sketch that I went back to review because, I work on Saturdays and I got home Saturday night and I conked out kind of early and I recorded it and I watched the episode this morning. And yeah, I'm glad I slept through most of this episode. I'm just going to say it.
Whoa. Yeah. Wow. Spoiler. Wait.
Yeah.
I can't fight you on that.
It was very beginning, and I feel like I'm really starting to feel the reduced audiences that they have in the studio.
Yeah,
because of COVID concerns.
Yeah, no, that was really felt too, like throughout this whole episode, where the audience just really wasn't there for it. And I know, I mean, we've talked about it before, like how it's a reduced audience, you know, like you said, because of COVID. But I mean, there were some. I remember there being some, like the show last week with Dan Levy or Levy, like I think the audience was better in that episode. Like they were more upped and amped and pumped up.
But I mean, even that had episodes where it felt like the audience wasn't very responsive. And I think they're still doing that thing where they're making up the audience out of first responders. So maybe, I don't know, maybe they're just not, maybe first responders aren't terribly good audiences. I don't know.
Yeah, there was one point where, like you said, where like Mikey was the guy in court, Mikey Day. And yeah. He was doing his spiel, and he was just not getting a lot of laughs at all. Like, dare I say, he was bombing with that material. It was quite...
Yeah. And I don't... I mean, I think that does have an effect on it. If you don't hear an audience laughing very much, things just seem less funny by default.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's all of what was going on here, you know?
Yeah, that's true. It was a little bit of, I mean, again, throughout the whole episode, like it was a little bit of the audience really not being there for it and the writing not really being strong enough. And yeah, so this cold open was, this not great.
Yeah, very amp beginning to the show, I thought. All right, next we got the Regina King monologue. Came out in like this bright yellow dress, kind of like a highlighter color, I thought.
Yeah. Sassy.
Yes. And she had a funny line in the beginning. She was like, if you're black, you probably know me for such and so. If you're white, you probably know me for Watchmen or this monologue right now.
Yeah. And I thought that's the direction they were going to go with the monologue, which is actually a pretty good direction. I actually like that because like I have noticed, like I've heard it on a few other podcasts, SNL podcasts too, where when they mentioned that Regina was going to host this episode, I think, you know, a lot of the hosts were, you know, white guys. They're saying, "Oh yeah, Regina King, I know her from Watchmen."
The SNL podcast host, you mean?
Yeah. They were like, Regina King, I know her from Watchmen, and I don't know, not much else, but like, I'm happy to see what she'll do. It does seem like a thing where, like, you know, like white audiences, maybe they know her from Watchmen and not much else, but like if you're a black person, you know, like, oh yeah, I've noticed she's been around since like the late 80s and early 90s. I remember her when she was on 227 with Marla Gibbs, and she was in, you know, Boys in the Hood and Poetic Justice and Friday. So, like, I think, like, I kind of wanted them, like, I feel like that's the direction they should have gone with, where, like, you know, black audiences know her better than white audiences, but they didn't go that way. They went with this thing where Keenan comes out dressed straight up like Run DMC and acts as, like, her hype man throughout the opening.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird thing. I did like, he had a good line. He said, you know, this show's a well-oiled machine, just like the Hindenburg. We do not know how true that would be.
Whew! I think that's Keenan, like, knowing, yeah, this episode's not going to be great.
Yeah. It was also funny where he was like, this show's been on for, what, 20 years?
Yeah.
Which I think is, at this point, is about the length of time that Keenan has been on the show. So...
Yeah. That might have been a little nod to his time on the show. I didn't even catch that. Good sir.
Could be. I don't know if that was supposed to be like that Keenan's oblivious, or if it's just the show didn't really start until I was here. I think you could interpret it either way, you know?
Very true. But yeah, I mean, this monologue, it was, I don't know, it felt kind of awkward in the beginning, but then once Keenan came on, Regina King seemed a little bit more relaxed, but it was still not great.
Yeah. I like your idea for the monologue of her, like, educating the white audiences of, this is where you know me from. That, I think that could have been a funny thing.
Yeah, because, like, I feel like she was also in, like, Jerry Maguire, which, you know, I think white audience might have known that. She was also in the Ray Charles biopic, Ray. She's won a Golden Globe and an Oscar recently for If Beale Street Could Talk. And she won an Emmy for Watchmen. So she's done stuff that, you know, white audiences might recognize, but black audiences will be like, oh, no, she was in Friday.
Like, yeah, she's directed episodes of Scandal and This Is Us. I see white people know those shows.
Yeah. Y'all watch Scandal?
Yeah.
Am I right?
White people went nuts for Scandal.
I know. They were like, this is my jam.
Yeah. No, I wasn't watching it, but I remember them bringing it up at the meetings.
Wait, what?
Oh, sorry. Said too much. Anyway.
I knew it.
Next sketch. That was called What's Your Type? Which was a MTV-style dating show with Ego as, like, the DJ announcer and Cecily as the host and Regina King as the contestant. And they bring out three cringy white dudes of a certain age.
Yeah, I don't... Again, this sketch is like...
I think I don't, and then you sighing. I think that sums up so much.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, the premise of this sketch, I guess, is that Regina King is a woman of a certain age, because they mentioned right up top that she's, like, 39 and a half.
Yeah.
And, like, she's getting older, so she's looking for a cringy, needy white dude to worship her. Mm-hmm. And, like, so then they have Alex... And Kyle and Mikey Day as, like, you know, cringy white dudes saying cringy white dudes things like, oh, how excited are you for Kamala Harris, yas queen? And I mean, I don't.
And Alex Moffat comes, you know, he's got, like, the Kangol hat, and, you know, he comes out, he's singing Two Princes by the Spin Doctors. Strong Jason Mraz vibes he was giving out.
Yeah, and at one point he, like, lifts his hat up and you see, like, a huge receding hairline. Yep. And then Mikey Day just comes out as, like, this total, like, kind of awkward, spazzy dude where he's, like, you know, his voice gets changed when he gets when he's awkward. Like,
He starts out, he wishes her a happy Black History Month. So we're getting off to a cringy beginning. And then he just starts free associating, like, Robin Williams at his worst, you know?
Discover!
But it turns out that Regina's character, she's turned on by all the cringy white dudes. And so it's her thing.
Right, and, like, and the host and the DJ are kind of disgusted by it, but she's turned on by it. I don't know, I think, I don't know, this sketch, I don't know what it's kind of trying to say. I don't know what it's trying to be. Because is it trying to say that, like, all black women of a certain age, you know, settle for cringy white dudes when they hit a certain age? Or I don't, I mean, I didn't know. I think the sketch didn't know how to play it. And I don't know if the characters, you know, the cast members actually knew how to play it either. It's like, I think they were all just
I don't know if this sketch was trying to make like some broader social point or anything. I thought they probably just thought, oh, this will be funny.
Yeah, maybe, but like, I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts? I'm babbling.
I mean, it was okay, I guess, relatively. I mean, considering some of the other stuff in the show, it was all right. I liked how at one point Ego's character was so disturbed or creeped out by the guys that she just like spontaneously combusted, and they just cut to like her clothing smoldering.
Yeah, that was funny.
That was cute. I think everybody played their characters well. You know, the Kyle, Alex, and Mikey, they were all as cringy as they were supposed to be. I thought Cecily did a nice job as the host. I thought Regina King was good in her part. And I thought Ego did what she had to do well. So
yeah.
I think it was okay. It wasn't a lot of big laughs, but it was fine.
Yeah, I guess so. It was just like, I don't know. I'm not sure. I wasn't quite understanding what was maybe it's like you said, they weren't really trying to say anything. They just wanted to make it funny, but I don't think they quite got there with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't quite get there. So, okay. On to the next thing. All right. Next we had a pre-tape, a commercial, a fake ad, for Peloton, which is if you like Peloton, but, you don't like the encouragement from the trainers. If you're the kind of person who doesn't respond to positive encouragement, Peloton gives you negative reinforcement and relentless criticism.
Yeah. I mean, apparently I don't have a Peloton bike, but apparently, yeah, this is a thing where you get to video chat or Skype-a-roo or whatever the kids calling it. And with a trainer, and the trainer is like, yeah, go for it, man. You did it. But it's like you said, like then they say, well, what about people who don't respond to positive reinforcement? And then they cut to the people in the commercial, because it's the pre-tape, and it's like you see Melissa saying, what did she say? Oh, if I hear the phrase "you can do this," I literally won't just approve a point.
Right. I actually like this. This one I thought was funny. I think it was absolutely the best thing in the show.
Yeah, no, I agree. This was like, it's a great concept. It was a great execution. Yeah, this is the sketch of the night.
They packed a lot of funny jokes in there. They were, because like they went into specifics about all the ways these trainers were giving you negative reinforcement. They were like, we give you our patented passive aggression, snotty disdain, insincere praise, avoidant attachment style. Like at one point, like somebody's on their Peloton bike and you just see two trainers talking, whispering about them.
Right.
Just to make you paranoid. They give you withering judgment, gaslighting about how far you've already come. And like, oh, it says I did like five laps or four laps, but I actually did five. And it's like, oh no, I think it's a computer. No, it's keeping track.
Yes. Emotional manipulation, all that. Shot of your own ass in an exaggerated fisheye lens.
Yes. And also theme music that you find insulting. And then they start playing the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme as you're on your bike.
which was
I really like this. I thought it was funny. It makes a lot of sense that people who work at SNL would be people who would write about this sort of thing. Because we've heard some effed up things about the environment at SNL at times.
We have.
So there was perhaps material to draw on.
Yeah, maybe there's like a few things in the sketch about what encouraged the people who wrote the sketch to write the sketch.
It could be. That sounds plausible.
Yeah.
But I thought this was just really funny. I thought it was short and quick, and it had a lot of great gags just packed into the running time.
Yeah, no, this was definitely the sketch of the night. It was, like I said, a great great concept, great execution. Everybody was great in their parts. This was like this was a home run for me, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Just under 3 minutes. It's Peloton. Highly encourage you to look that up online.
Absolutely.
Next we had Gorilla Glue, which so didn't get this.
How
do we even explain this? I don't know.
Well, this was based on something that happened on the interwebs this past week.
I was hearing a little about Gorilla Glue, but I don't think I paid it much mind.
Okay, well, so basically, all right, so I'll run it down for you.
Give me some more context, please.
So basically, this woman, a 40-year-old teacher from, I believe, Louisiana, she went viral on TikTok because while she was doing her hair one day, instead of using like her regular hair care product, I think she's like a mm-hmm. like Gorilla Gel or something like that, she used Gorilla Glue, actual Gorilla Glue, which is a very strong adhesive that you buy in a hardware store. And she used that on her hair. And sure enough, her hair got stuck and like it got stuck in there. So she tried to wash it like 4 times. She tried like a lot of, you know, nail polish remover and everything to get it out. And
so wait, did it get stuck in a weird style then?
I think so. Yeah. It's like basically she couldn't move her hair at all because it was just glued down.
Okay. So she had like a Cameron Diaz and There's Something About Mary thing going on.
Yeah. Something like that. And, okay. So basically it was on TikTok. It went viral, I guess, cause she videotaped herself gluing her hair or something. And, she put up a GoFundMe to help get the glue out of her hair. She like tweeted Gorilla Glue saying, "Hey, your glue works too well, and like I got glue in my hair and I can't get it out." And Gorilla Glue had to tweet them back saying, "Hey, I'm sorry about that, blah blah blah." And then people were saying, "No, Gorilla Glue, you need to pay this woman for her trauma for putting glue in her hair."
It's not a product that's designed for hair, right?
No, it's not at all.
So how is that on them?
I don't know. It just is.
I mean, yeah, no. If you have a product and you use it in the way other than it was intended, that's not really on the product. That's on you.
Yeah. Hey, man, you're preaching to the choir, brother. So basically what happened is I think a doctor offered to, you know, work on getting the glue out of her hair for free. She put up a GoFundMe and she made money. She made like $20,000 from the GoFundMe to get the glue out. And of course she videotaped the whole thing and she ended up getting the glue out of her hair through the doctors. And she like donated the $20,000 she got from GoFundMe to like a charity.
And, oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. But she did make, I think she made money somehow off this whole thing. Cause I think she put out merchandise or something like that. She made some money off that. So that's... I know.
This is going to make me go full Jeff Goldblum. What?
So that's basically...
Okay, I still don't understand one aspect. Why would getting the Gorilla Glue out of her hair be like this exceptionally expensive procedure? Why did she need a GoFundMe?
I didn't look too much into it. Like, I guess because, you know, you got to go to a doctor, and if you don't have insurance, you know, getting Gorilla Glue out of your hair might cost a few bucks.
Okay.
So she was internet famous for a little bit for getting Gorilla Glue in her hair. So based on that, they made this sketch.
Right, where we had Keenan and Regina just kind of doing a commercial like, you know, "Hey, if you've used Gorilla Glue in place of hair products..."
Right.
We're here to help.
Right. So they're basically like a law firm commercial, like a Salino and Barnes type.
Right. Right.
And so then we have people coming in with giving testimonials saying, "Hey, you know," and of course they also like repeat the fact that like, "Hey, we are not dumb. You know, as many as one person in America gets Gorilla Glue in their hair."
Yeah, okay, yeah. See, that made me laugh, you saying that right now. That I found amusing.
Yeah, so I don't know if, like, you need to know that whole backstory about that whole woman that went viral on TikTok to understand this sketch.
I think I needed a little more context for this. I was like, okay, I vaguely remember hearing about Gorilla Glue this week, but because it happened on TikTok, which I don't pay any attention to because I am a 48-year-old man, I did not really get it.
Yeah, TikTok is not for you. If you're beyond like 35, I'd say. It's just, it's not your
even,
thing.
Even that seems like a stretch.
I was trying to be nice. I don't know how many over 30 people who are on TikTok that we listen to this podcast.
Yeah, if you like TikTok, enjoy. Have a wonderful time TikToking up a storm. You go on your skateboard and you play that Fleetwood Mac song.
Yeah.
But, it's just not my personal thing, so.
It's not my bag, baby.
That's right. It just, so this one, I don't know. I thought the sketch was rough, though.
It seemed like the audience wasn't into it. I'm trying to figure out exactly what didn't work. There were some things that worked. Like, at one point, Regina King's character says, like, hey, we know what we're up against. We know it's going to be tough taking a gorilla to court. But, you know.
Yeah. But it didn't go over great. I thought the big problem was it was about twice the length it needed to be. Sketch is just shy of 4 minutes, and I think two would have been sufficient.
And then I think they had Chris Redd come out saying he glued his do-rag onto his head, and his girlfriend, played by Cecily, came out saying after they sue Gorilla Glue, they're gonna sue Sharpie because her eyebrows were she did it with a Sharpie and now she can't get them off.
And she had an ass thing going on.
Yeah, because
I forget what exactly caused her ass condition, but she had this weird shape protruding from her ass.
Yeah, I think it was silly putty, and her ass was kind of pointy. Yeah, the audience didn't seem to really be into the sketch at all.
They were not having it. No.
Yeah, and there were funny. I think this is the theme I'm gonna go with for a lot of the sketches for tonight. Where I think the script needed a rewrite. Or it's the germ of an idea is there.
Yeah.
But this is the first draft. This thing is another draft.
Well, as Lauren would always say, show doesn't go on because it's ready. The show goes on because it's 11:30. So.
Yeah, very true.
I think this week is an example of that.
Oh, this is a primo example of that.
Maybe because the impeachment trial only ended on Saturday, they were caught a little unawares or something. I don't know.
There was one good line where they said, call us here at 1-800-GLUE, and they spelled glue GLOW. There are a few things here. It just needed to be explored a bit. Or maybe, like you said, just shortened and, cut the fat. Yeah. But it was...
We had some funny wigs.
The wigs were nice.
We had some funny wigs. We had a comical ass thing going on. Those should be great comedy ingredients, but no.
She had a pointy butt. She had a pointy butt. It's like Madonna's cone bra, but in her butt. That's hilarious. That's funny. It's a bag of glass.
next, birthday speaking of sketches that go on for too long, we had birthday gifts.
Yes, birthday gifts.
With Adie Bryant as birthday girl Trish opening her presents from her friends. And they're all funny signs. And after the first couple, they're all funny signs about her drinking too much. And they just get a little too personal and insulting.
Yeah, so it's basically there are a bunch of, suburban house moms getting together. And it's like you said, they're giving her all these signs. Those are these type of signs you see in a Pier 1 or a Home Goods, live, laugh, love, or it's wine o'clock somewhere or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's a play on that. But it's like you said, they start off innocent enough, but then they go to signs like, oh, I like you when I'm effed up. And hey, barkeep, I want to die tonight.
Yeah. So the point, they're not even jokes or puns. It's just, hey, you have a problem, Trish.
Yeah. And that's pretty much the sketch. It's really, this is one of the most simplest sketches to describe, because that's pretty much it. There's no misdirection. It doesn't take any turns. It's straightforward.
No turns. Doesn't really build. The signs don't get substantially worse. I the only one I really liked was home, where the ho and me come together.
Yeah.
But this was another oof.
It was literally just 80 reading signs
yeah.
for 4 minutes.
I mean, after a while, I started to think, like, you know, it must have been tough for them to just remember what order all those gift bags had to come in. And I bet 80 was a little nervous about pulling out all the signs and making sure they're right side up.
Yeah, that's true.
I started thinking about the technical aspects of the sketch halfway through, and that's never a good sign.
Yeah, just because you're not busy laughing at the sketch. If you have time to think about other things other than the jokes in the sketch, it's not a good sketch.
I was pretty disengaged by the sketch. I was just like, did they number the gift bags? Or was it like, oh, I had to get the one on the left first, or this one?
Maybe they use like a color-coded system, like, oh, give her the red first, then the blue, then the green.
Maybe. I would prefer a sketch about that, about the logistics of putting this sketch together.
The making of the birthday gift sketch.
It's like that old Gene Siskel rule on Siskel and Ebert, where it was like, is this movie more interesting than a documentary of the same actors having lunch?
Wow.
And in this case, I would rather watch the documentary of these actors having lunch.
Fair enough. Another sketch where it's a very simple premise. It's a very thin kind of premise, a very thin concept. But it needed more. Like when you have a sketch with like a very thin concept like this one, you need to build up. You need to build more on something in order for it to carry. Because like if the concept can't carry it, then you need like stronger dialogue, or you need like stronger performances, or you need something to distract you from the fact that the premise is kind of thin. And like
this was just there.
It was just there. It needed like a to take a turn, or it needed to go darker. It needed to go.
Like, I don't know. Like maybe 80's character could have her own signs in retaliation that she gives as gifts to her guests or something. I don't know.
This is again another sketch where it's kind of something there, but it needed another rewrite or it needed another.
Yeah, they needed to get more outrageous somehow.
Right. They needed to
build more, like you said.
Exactly. So, All right. 4 for 4. Well, actually, no. The Peloton sketch was good. So.
Peloton, gold.
Right.
You know, but that I'd like to airlift that sketch and put it into another better show surrounding it.
Agreed.
Yeah. Actually, was Regina King in that sketch at all?
No, she was not.
So I'm wondering if that was because it was a pre-tape. Maybe it was done for an earlier episode and it was put into this one.
Possibly.
I mean, it's possible, I guess.
Yeah, very possible.
So who knows? Okay. On to the next sketch. Another pre-tape called The Negotiator with Regina King as a police hostage negotiator with Mikey Day as a guy holding hostages on the roof. And Regina ate some gummy bears that were in an evidence bag that were infused with quote-unquote love. So she had some weed gummy bears, you guys.
Yeah, and the whole sketch is just her tripping. And that's literally the whole sketch. It's like it's her trying to do her job, but then she's, you know, tripping balls on on the gummy bear. We see Pete Davidson in a giant gummy bear suit on the roof with Mikey Day and Andrew Dismukes.
Yeah,
Pete singing a little song. I'm a weed gummy. I'm a weed gummy. And then we see 80 Bryant in a little gummy bear suit singing.
Second weed gummy bear.
Yeah, two of them.
Two of them.
Rule of twos.
And then and then Melissa Villasenor shows up as Marge Simpson. She does a nice Marge Simpson, and they did a nice job making her up to look like Marge Simpson. That I found. Not so much amusing, but mildly interesting.
Yeah, and of course, Regina's like, oh, Marge Simpson, what are you doing up there? And she says, like, I'm not Marge Simpson. I'm the devil, and you're my greatest creation. And, like, they sing it. The whole thing is a huge, big trip, basically. This whole sketch is just, like, one big weird. Like, I really feel like somebody wrote this at 5 in the morning after not getting a lot of sleep. And just, like, just had Lord knows what in their system.
I'm sure it seemed like a good idea at 5 in the morning. Or maybe it was just an idea.
Yeah, like
They were like, this will eat up 4 minutes of airtime.
Yeah, this whole... I mean, it's... I mean, I can't say I didn't like the sketch. It was...
Oh, I can.
Oh, okay. All right. Here we go.
I did not like the sketch.
Okay. I mean, I didn't think it was great. I mean, I like Melissa's...
Nor did I.
Okay. I mean, Melissa's impression of Marge Simpson was cool.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, I would like to see that in another sketch.
Yeah, but yeah, for the most part, this was just kind of trippy, weird nonsense, I'll say.
Yeah, just kind of weird for the sake of being weird. It seems like something they would have put in the 10-to-1 slot, but...
Yeah, absolutely. This definitely belonged in the 10-to-1 slot.
Yeah.
But I don't know, this was just like kind of stoner type of, what's happening here? Type of sketch.
Yep. And, you know, maybe I would have liked it more if I was a stoner. I don't know. But I'm not, so I didn't.
Well, yeah.
What you going to do?
Your loss.
Yeah, I guess so. So next we had our musical guest for the week, Nathaniel Rateliff, whose name is not Ratecliff. And my apologies to Nathaniel Rateliff again. His first number was Redemption. His second number with the Night Sweats was A Little Honey.
Yeah.
What do we think of him?
That was all right. I think I described it to you when I, you know, when it was first announced that he was going to host. Like, oh yeah, he was like kind of like a folksy, bluesy type of singer where it's almost like country music, but not quite. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, you know, there are no big shocks or surprises. It's pretty much like straightforward performances. You know, he's a good singer. I don't know why. I thought I heard like a little Joe Cocker kind of in his voice when he sings.
I got a little hint of the Joe Cocker. Yeah, I could see that.
Like a little
in
bit.
In the second number, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, for the most part, I thought it was okay. It was kind of like coffee shop folk music.
Yeah, I thought. Well, you know how I said the last couple of weeks how I was very impressed with the musical guests.
Yes,
that streak is over.
Wow, bringing John Trumbull, bringing the heat.
You know, we had the Machine Gun Kelly and who do we have?
Phoebe Bridgers, guitar
Phoebe
smasher.
Bridgers, yes. I was forgetting her name for a moment. I liked both of them. I thought they did a nice job. It just didn't work for me. I thought his first number was just a dirge. And A Little Honey I just found very eh. Honestly, if I didn't have to watch it for the podcast, I would have fast-forwarded to the first number.
Damn. Yeah, I mean, I can kind of see that. It is very kind of, I don't want to say blasé, but it's kind of like, it's a type of music you'd hear in a commercial for like Target or Macy's or, you know, it's just like that unoffensive kind of folksy type of radio-friendly music.
Yeah, just did nothing for me, man.
Yeah, I also did like how, like, after he did his first song, Redemption, you said?
Mm-hmm.
After he did that song... you know, because the chorus goes like, you know, just set me free. Like, after he did that, they went into a commercial for the new Justin Timberlake movie, Palmer, that's on Apple Plus. And that song is in that commercial.
Oh, like, I didn't catch that because I wasn't watching the show live this week. So,
okay. But yeah, like, if you watch.
Weird.
Yeah, if you watched it live, you'll remember, like, the song he sang, you know, just set me free. And then they went into the commercial for Palmer. And, you know, it's Justin Timberlake being all dramatic. Like, that boy is my life. I need him. You know, he makes me. I was nothing. Then he made me feel like somebody. And in the background, you hear the song, just set me free. And I'm like, I just heard that song.
Can I hear your Justin Timberlake impression again, please?
Yeah, sure. That boy made me feel like I was nothing. But he made me feel like I was somebody. That boy is my life. I'm going to do whatever I got to do to keep that boy in my life. Just set me free!
That really tickles me.
Right?
That is up there with he needs to know that I fought for him.
Oh, man, we got to bring that back.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's we should have, you know, you're Justin Timberlake, meet my Adam Driver. And...
Yeah, I don't even know what I was going for. I just go like that boy is my life. I need my boy.
That boy is my life. Oh, there's nothing worse than the fake Southern accents.
Yeah, that I just like you changing that boy's life. Nope, he's changing mine.
You remember just... what was the movie where the guy from Dawson's Creek played a football player and had John Voight.
Oh, Varsity Blues.
Varsity Blues. I just remember the trailer for that where he was like, I don't want your life. And I'm just like, oh, end my pain.
The saddest thing is they did that. They must have had done that numerous times, and that was the best take they got.
They were like, yes, that's the one that's going in the movie.
It's like
the, I don't want your life.
Yeah, it's like the oh hi Mark moment in Room.
Yeah, Room. Yeah. You're just like, oh, okay. All right.
Like, that was the best you got? Oh, yeah. That doesn't speak well for the rest of the movie.
Yeah. At the end of the first Daniel Ratliff song, they have that usual thing that they have on SNL where it's like, you know, want to hear more? Hey, Siri, play more. And I was like, no, I do not want to hear more. Hey, no, thank you.
Hey, Siri, play anything else but Nathaniel Ratliff.
Yes. I was like, yes. Hey, Siri, never play me Nathaniel Ratliff. Thank you, Siri.
Dude, never play Nathaniel Ratliff.
All right, so.
Woo!
Show's not going well, you guys.
It's, yeah, so far, no good.
This is, well, except for the Peloton.
Except for Peloton. Peloton is.
Except for Peloton. So let's see if Weekend Update can turn it around. We got the Weekend Update with Colin Jost and the Michael Shea Levy. I don't know anymore.
Let's call the whole thing off.
So of course they cover the big news story about Trump getting acquitted 57-43. Let's see. I'm gonna just take a minute and just go through all my favorite jokes from this segment. Okay, I'm done.
Wow.
What do you got?
Let's talk about Michael Che some more.
Yes.
Michael Che had this great joke about how the whole insurrection was on videotape. And, mm-hmm. of course, he came up with the line saying, well, a little Black history lesson for you. Just because it's on videotape doesn't mean you're going to get a conviction. And the audience, they were not ready for that.
No.
I mean, he makes a point, but the audience was like, oh.
Yeah, it got that. And I love how defiant Che is in those moments. He was just like, you know, whatever.
He had like a few other jokes later on that like kind of got that same response. Like, well, we'll get to it, but the Aunt Jemima joke and the Larry Flint joke was like,
Well, we can go ahead and do those. All right, brought those both up.
Well, he said the Larry Flint joke because Larry Flint passed away. And he said,
which honestly weirded me out because honestly, I thought he had already passed away.
Yeah, me too. I'll say it.
There is nothing weirder than when a famous person dies and you're like, what, really? I thought they were already dead.
Yeah, it's like Larry King, same thing. All the Larrys.
Larry King I knew was alive, but Larry Flint, I sincerely thought he was dead.
I'm not going to lie and pretend like, I was like, of course I knew he was alive. I was like, no, I kind of thought.
Because I don't think Larry Flint had really been in my head since they made the movie about him. And that was like over 20 years ago, because that was like late 90s, I think.
Right, yeah, that's back when like Courtney Love was like going to be like a serious actor. And people said she was good in the movie, but then...
Well, she got nominated for an Oscar, as I recall. So.
Yeah, but then...
Yeah, and I remember her being good and... I saw the movie. It was a good movie.
But Larry Flint. So the joke goes, Larry Flint died this weekend, and the family says in lieu of flowers that people send full bushes.
That's a solid joke.
That's a solid joke. But I think the audience was like, they're looking kind of weird. Yeah. And then the Aunt Jemima joke was saying, they were saying basically how Aunt Jemima is going to change its name now to the Pearl Milling Company. Pearl Milling, of course, being the woman that owned Aunt Jemima.
Yeah, another solid joke.
The audience was like kind of weirded out by that, but you heard there was one person that was like, ha ha.
and you know what? Like, if you get that reaction in like your stand-up act, that's almost more satisfying than everyone in the room laughing.
It really is.
If you hit like one person really hard, oh, that's great.
It really is. It's like you and me, guy. Just you and me.
That one guy really liked it.
We're the only ones that get it. I love you, man.
What do you think of the Aunt Jemima name change thing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with it. I mean, I guess I see people's point. It is a little, you know, racist and, slavey.
Oh, 100%. And I remember, was it like back in the 90s that they remade the Aunt Jemima character to make her, like they removed the rag from her head and they, you know, gave her a hairstyle. So now she was like, you know, this hip, lovable aunt.
Yes, she had auntie vibes. But yeah, I do remember, like, as a kid, seeing in the bottle where she did have, like, her hair done up. It was, like, you know, like a mammy type of
person. Oh, yeah. No, I totally remember that from when I was a kid in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, and then they just kind of got rid of that and just gave her, like, a fresh new do, a fresh perm. And,
yeah, to make her a little less mammy, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and so now they're just doing away with that altogether and going with Pearl Milling Company, which, I mean, it's not as catchy of a name at all, but
it's such a generic name.
It really is. It feels like,
and like we were discussing this on Facebook this week with our super producer Frank Ablawi, and I was like, I don't get why they didn't just go with something with some kind of tie, like Auntie. But you know, Frank was saying, and I think he has a point. That was probably too tied to the Aunt Jemima thing. It would just remind people of that. So I was like, okay, yeah, I see that.
But I mean, Pearl Milling, that's unappetizing, doesn't sound memorable.
It's so generic. I've already forgotten it like three times. If you didn't keep saying Pearl Milling Company, I would not be able to recall it.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. I don't know how they're going to, you know, promote this and, you know, get it in people's consciousness and make, but I don't know. They got a bit of a battle to
It's so plot. Plain. It's so plain.
Really is. I mean, like, you know, Hungry Jack. All right, that's catchy. I get that.
Yeah, Hungry Jack. That sticks in your head. Pearl Milling Company? What is that?
Yeah, it sounds like an insurance company. I don't want that.
It does. It does.
Do you have life insurance? Come to Pearl Milling Company.
All right. So let's see. We had Kate McKinnon come up as a member of QAnon. And she's dressed up as a witch and talking about eating children.
Basically she was somebody who was looking to join QAnon because she heard
about it. Was that it? I thought she was already in it and she was supposed to explain QAnon to us.
Yeah, we'll get into it. But yeah, this little segment was kind of, again, this is one of those segments, if you like Kate and just love seeing Kate being Kate, you'll like this. But it was kind of, I don't know, this one was kind of a bit of a struggle for me to get through.
Yeah, this was a swing and a miss for me. I usually love Kate McKinnon. This just didn't really work for me.
Right, because I mean, I think the premise was she was saying she was this person who was like a regular person. No, I'm just looking to get into QAnon because I heard, you know, they're looking for people who all the people like all the Democrats and whatnot who want to eat children, and like I'm not for that. Of course, she's dressed up. She's a witch. Of course, she is for that. And then, like, so she plays that kind of role for a little bit, but then she says, all right, guys, I'm in love with you. I am a witch, and, you know, I have a home out in New Hampshire, and I like to eat kids. And then she goes on to sort of compare QAnon to witches, where, again, like, that's something, that should have been the bit. There is something to that, where, like, QAnon, you know, they want to defeat people who eat kids, and like, and how, you know, there was something there. Again, there's something there, but they kind of padded it out with this other stuff that was kind of not necessary. Like, I saw somebody on Twitter saying this about this episode, how it feels like there's, like, a lot of filler in all of the sketches, where there is, a like, a germ of an idea that needed to be worked out and worked on, but they didn't really do that. They just kind of filled it up with all this other, you know, extraneous stuff that doesn't really add to the sketch, and it just kind of drags and takes up time. And I felt I
just thought it was very muddled. It was just weird.
Yeah, it just needed to be more focused. Like, if they focus on that thing about how, like, oh yeah, QAnon is after, Democrats because they say they eat kids. And, like, as somebody who actually does eat kids, I'm offended by that. Like, or something like that. Like, there could have been something about, like, the comparison between Democrats and QAnon and witches. Like, there's something there, but it didn't really come together like it should have.
Okay. I feel like we've given this segment more attention than it deserves.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's fine. Let's see. That Colin told a joke about Morgan Wallen because, you know, again, he said the N-word and I had missed this in the news. Apparently since that scandal broke, his album sales have gone up 1,000%.
Yeah. Because
people are horrible.
Yep, sure are.
And then Colin says a joke that you just know Shay wrote, where it's like, and that would happen to us if only NBC would let me say the N-word.
Yeah, and then like Shay looked at him like, ooh.
Yeah.
Kind of shook his head disapprovingly.
I gotta give Colin points for being such a good sport as to read those jokes where Shay's trying to get him canceled.
Yeah, I thought that joke was okay enough.
Yeah.
So then next up we got Lauren Holt, new cast member, getting her own little segment as a relationship expert, Mackenzie Taylor-Joy.
Yes. Talking about fun things to do for Valentine's Day, and then right at the beginning of her segment, she gets dumped by text message.
Yeah. And, so then it's just her kind of having this breakdown about trying to go, you know, talking about how she already rented a tandem bicycle this weekend, but you know, you can ride it by yourself, you know, and
right.
put
your, you can do an Airbnb and be by yourself where it gets dark at 4 o'clock and you're just left alone with your thoughts in the darkness. This was all right. She did a little smeared mascara thing, kind of Tammy Faye Baker-y, cause she's, you know, it's hitting her hard. Yeah. I liked how at the end of the segment, she got another text message from her boyfriend saying, "Hey, sexy, I just dumped Mackenzie. Where are you at?" And then it was like, "Oh, sorry, wrong number."
Yeah, that was funny. And like, there was one line I thought I liked where I think Che says, "Hey, you know, you could still go on this, you know, vacation by yourself." And she says, "Oh, what am I going to do? Eat dinner alone? How would that even work?"
Yeah.
Like, again, I mean, I like the fact that like this new cast member who hasn't really gotten a lot to do yet in this season, but like this is like her first big kind of solo moment, got to shine.
Yeah, it's nice to see her get a showcase.
Yeah, but again, this is like a little thing where it wasn't quite there. Like it needed a little something more than.
It was all right. I would say it was fine. Yeah. You know, and in this episode, fine is a rare quality to have.
Mediocrity is in short supply.
Exactly. And then lastly, I guess making up for not having too many guests on Weekend Update last week, we had a third segment with Beck Bennett as drunk Tom Brady celebrating his Super Bowl win.
This one was, it just seemed like all filler. It really felt like Beck just kind of rambling and riffing, like saying stuff here and there, like, "Hey, I got set," because you know Tom Brady. Now this is his he's been to the Super Bowl 10 times.
And it was his 7th win, I believe.
So yeah, so people are saying he's like the greatest quarterback of all time, which you know there's an argument for that. And right. People saying, "Oh, see, I did it without you, Bill Belichick. You're not my dad anymore." And it's a lot of kind of I don't know where he was going with it. It was just like him just kind of rambling and talking, and he brings out the Super Bowl trophy.
Yeah, replica of it. It was. I found the replica kind of amusing because, like, for a number of years, I worked for Tiffany & Company, which is the company that manufactures the Super Bowl trophy. So I was kind of amused to see, like, you know, a football on a stand that they probably just spray painted to make it look like. And I was like, it doesn't quite look like that, but
it really did look like they just spray painted a Nerf football and stuck it on. Like a 2x4.
Yeah. I did like him opening a beer on it.
That
was amusing. I guess the joke here was that it's just like Tom Brady letting loose with the celebration because normally he's so disciplined to be the amazing quarterback he is.
Yeah, I guess but, that was it. And, like, you know, of course he brings up the fact that, like, no one really likes him because, you know, he has a supermodel wife, he wins all the time, and he's just, like, one of those winners that people don't like because they're winners. And, you know, of course, there's the MAGA stuff, of course. And I think... That doesn't help. It does not. And I think at one point he said, oh, people don't like me, they're just going to talk about how I kiss my kids. Which is a thing that he does, like, he kisses his kids on the lips, which I've always found that to be interesting, we'll say.
It's a little off-putting.
It's a little, but I remember seeing footage of, like, him and his dad kiss on the lips. So I'm like, all right, I guess this is how their family does it.
So that's how it is in that family.
Mm-hmm. Touchdown.
Okay.
That was gross. But, as far as this, I mean, I thought Beck played it well.
Beck was all right.
Yeah, it just felt like, I don't know, it didn't feel like they were just, you didn't have anything to say. You just kind of...
I don't know. You know, three death segments in Weekend Update is a lot. I feel like two is plenty, personally.
Agreed. I mean, especially when we'll talk about later, especially when you realize that they had to cut a sketch for time this episode. I was like,
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
We will get to that later.
All right, so we're barreling towards the end. I feel like I'm emceeing a show. It's like, hey guys, you only got like three comics left. You know, it's like when you're emceeing a comedy show that is obviously gone on way too long, and the host just starts saying like, hey, only this many more comics. And it's like, that's a bad comedy show.
Are you ready for your headliner? Well, we got four more comics, and then it'll come up.
Exactly. All right. So next we had 70s Green Room, which takes place in Chicago, 1978. So we're, you know, breaking out all the Afro wigs and the 70s clothing.
Platform shoes, butterfly collars, stuff I have in my closet right now.
So we had Bowen Yang as Maurice. He's like a manager of this big musician. Regina King playing someone named Fiona, who's sort of like, she seemed like a Diana Ross type of singer to me.
Yeah, they were definitely going for like a disco Diana Ross vibe.
Right. And like he's just breaking it to her that they have nothing in her rider, and she just slaps him silly.
Yeah, I mean, with this sketch is kind of hard to describe because, I mean, the premise is very simple. You know, it's just like, you know, like you said, like Regina King comes in as a, I think, Falona, this, like you said, like this disco.
I thought it was Fiona, but.
I think it was Falona, something like that. But like, okay. But yeah, then we see.
I am not going to rewatch it to get the name right, so.
But yeah, but then we see Regina King come in like a big kind of long Diana Ross type of wig, toned arms like a motherfucker. like straight up yoked, like, whoa.
She's been doing that Peloton.
I know. She's been doing Peloton.
And she's been getting that negative reinforcement from the Peloton. And it's motivated her. It's pushed her to you know, get jacked.
Whatever. I don't give a shit. I get paid either way.
But I did think the performances in this were good. I liked how rapid fire it was when Bowen was just giving her all the things that weren't in her rider. Yeah. So I thought the pacing was good.
Right, because like I think that's where like the strength of the sketch really lied. Where like the premise was super simple, but it's just like the rapid fire delivery of all the things that they didn't have for her. Like she said, "Well, do you have my yellow M&Ms? No. Do you have my blah blah blah? No. Do you have my Sanka? No. Do you have my Shasta? No. Like what do you have? This dry bowl of lettuce salad, and then
This dry salad, and then she smacks it out of his hand, and then like 80 comes in as the makeup artist, and she has nothing that she needs to make up Fiona. I'm just gonna keep coloring her Fiona.
That's fine.
And you know, it's a similar kind of thing. And then Keenan and Andrew Dismukes come in as the backup musicians, and they don't know any of her songs.
Right. They don't know. They don't know. Beep beep. Hey, hey, who's that? It's me. And, like, it's her, like, kind of rattling off all the songs and it's rap. Like, that's where I guess that's just where all the comedy comes from. Just rapid fire, like you said, delivery of all these things. And they say, no, do you know, ba-ba-ba? No, do you know, ba-ba-ba? No, do you know, ba-ba-ba? And it's like, it's a very kind of, I guess, like absurdist type of sketch where like it's all delivery.
Yeah.
I don't know. This one left me kind of like, I don't know if I like this or not.
I didn't like it, but I appreciated the effort. I feel like they were trying to save it in the performances, you know?
Yeah.
But the writing was just kind of monotonous because it's like, well, is it that funny to see this thing three times? Not particularly.
Yeah, this was all performance. Like, the performances were doing all the heavy lifting in this one. I think I feel the same way you do. I like that they kind of took a risk with this type of sketch where it's not like your standard kind of sketch. It's a little bit more about, like I said, the performances and the delivery. And like, if you're into that, you'll be impressed by that whole thing. But if you're not, I can see you kind of zone out on it.
I'm sorry, I just zoned out on that.
Right. All right. Hilarious. I see what you're there.
Yeah.
But this sketch was like, I think I appreciate the effort, but I don't know if I really like the sketch.
You like this sketch hypothetically. You like the idea of this sketch.
You know what? Yes.
This actual sketch, not so much.
Yes, exactly. And I did like Keenan's outfit. That was pretty tight.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I like the idea of it rather than the actual it. I'll give you this.
Yeah. If they went up to you and they said, Darren, would you like to see a sketch like this? You would be like, yes, I would. Thank you very much. And then they show you the actual sketch and you're like, oh, no, not like that.
I was clearly mistaken.
No, I take that back. I rescind everything I just said.
I immediately regret that decision.
All right. Lastly, we have women's theater, which is a school assembly where I guess they're hard up for performers. What was the rationale for bringing in the women's theater people into the school assembly? I forget.
I mean, I don't know if they had a rationale. I think they had somebody. Oh, wait, no, because like they had somebody who was supposed to come in, but they dropped out at the last minute, which caused Andrew Dismukes to go, no.
Yeah. I did like Andrew Dismukes in the little bits that he had to do. So they bring in a women's theater group to perform at the school assembly because that's a thing that happens.
Yes, a feminist theater ensemble who performs at an underground bookstore that serves Moscato, which is very specific.
And they're doing an age-appropriate version of their regular show, but it quickly emerges that they have really just done a quick find and replace, and instead of saying the word vagina, they are just saying elbow.
Right. And so it's basically the vagina monologues, but with elbows, because you can't say vagina.
Right.
In front of kids, apparently.
Right.
I mean, I guess the one thing I really wasn't crazy about in this sketch was the way they kind of cut back and forth between the performers on stage and the kids in the audience.
Commenting on it.
Yeah. Like, as soon as, so the people are on stage, it was like Regina King, who was like doing like spoken word poetry, you know, about her quote unquote elbow, her the secret power between her thighs, her secret South Carolina. And then they would cut to the kids, you know, Dismukes and Chris Redd saying like, what do they mean? They're talking about their elbows, but they're pointing to their crotches. Cause I guess you need that to sort of, I mean, I guess
SNL likes doing this type of thing a lot where they have like some bizarre performance happening in the sketch. And then they feel the need to cut to other cast members playing audience members being like, whoa, isn't this weird? Why is this happening? And I don't know if you need that. I guess they're just trying to give as many cast members as possible stuff to do, but most of the time I don't feel like it's needed.
Yeah, like I also kind of felt like maybe they did that just for the studio audience's sake, so the studio audience could kind of pick up on what's going on. You know, they're like, oh, it seems like they've replaced the word elbow with vagina, and I was like, I don't know if you need that. I think if the writing is good enough, like the audience will pick up on that. Like maybe you can mention it once.
Yeah.
You don't need to like hold their hand.
Yeah, it's like they're not entirely trusting their own premise to come across, so they kind of have to, point the way. Dismukes had a moment towards the end where like he said something that he was like, well, I don't understand. Were they not talking about elbows? And I Heidi Gardner's character said something like, oh, this isn't really for you. And he was like, yeah, I know. I was being sarcastic.
Yeah.
I thought that was all right. I thought Dismukes did that well.
Yeah, that was good. And I don't know. I think part of me thinks like it would have been a stronger sketch if they just kept the focus on the performers. It was an 80, Kate and Regina. Like, I think like Kate was kind of, you know, kind of reminded me of like a Joy Behar type of one.
She was the older woman. You know, Regina King was had like the African headdress, and 80s character was sort of more butch, I guess.
Yeah, she's like, oh, once I discovered my elbow, I was rubbing it up against everything. Oh,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like it's like when they cut away from that, that kind of took away from the performances a little bit on stage. Like, they're like,
yeah,
it felt like you should just left it on the stage and people would have picked up on it. We don't need to see like reaction shots every couple of seconds.
Yeah.
They also had one thing where I think at one point the performers mentioned the word dong. And then, of course, they cut to the audience or the kids. And Mikey Day, who's the teacher, was like, oh, no, actually, that's the one thing that the parents were okay with. Which I felt like, again, that's something that could have been something where, you know, people are weirded out by the word vagina, but they're not weirded out about dongs and, you know,
milk. Yeah, they could have maybe done a little more with the double standard there. That's something. Honestly, what I found most interesting was the technical glitch at the end.
Yeah.
Where at one point Regina King is talking, and then the camera is on Kate just standing there, and she's not even lit. And then it cuts to Mikey and Heidi. So I feel like there was a blown cue or something like that. I don't know what happened, but it's very unusual to see the technical glitches like that on SNL.
Yeah, I thought like they would even maybe put up the dress rehearsal on YouTube, but when I was rewatching it today, I was like, oh no, they put up that version up on YouTube with the big old.
Interesting. I was wondering that too, but I didn't look at the YouTube version because I was like, I don't want to see that sketch again. So wow, that's the dress version must have been worse.
I guess, yeah, because that was a big old boof. And that's another thing too, where because the cameraman had to cut to the people on stage, they had to cut to Regina, then cut to the kids in the audience, then he had to cut to Kate, then he had to cut to kids in the audience, then he had to cut to 80, then cut back to the kids. Like, what with all this cutting back and forth, I really just think it just takes away from the performances they're supposed to be watching. And I don't know, like,
yeah,
I think it should have just been them doing. Like you said, like maybe they didn't trust enough in their material that people would get or be entertained enough by the whole vagina monologue, so they needed to go back to the kids in the audience for like reaction shots and like, oh my god, this is weird, right? Like, I don't know, it didn't.
Mm. Yeah, didn't work. So much of the show did not work. That was all the sketches in the show. There was also a cut for time sketch that is on YouTube.
Called Kyle and Friends.
It's a Kyle Mooney joint. Just talking about how, you know, we've been kind of in COVID world for nearly a year now. And so Kyle's decided to put himself out there a little more and make more of an effort to make friends backstage at SNL, where he's been a cast member for 7.5 years.
Yeah.
I kind of like that premise.
Yeah, but it's where it's. Yeah, but it's kind of weird because like, didn't he come in with Beck? Weren't they like the duo for a while?
Yeah, but I think this isn't necessarily so much of Kyle's real persona. It's Kyle's fake backstage persona. You know, like how he had in several of the shorts, he had the torrid affair with Leslie Jones.
Yes, I remember that.
So, I mean, I'm sure that the real life Kyle Mooney is better liked and less creepy than he comes off in this sketch.
Yeah.
But for the sake of the sketch, he's creepy and off-putting. And I thought that worked okay. I think this was funnier than a lot of the stuff that was on the show.
I'll go with you on that. Yeah, it was definitely. I mean, it definitely kind of went different places and had turns, and it definitely it was more realized and more fleshed out than some of the other sketches we saw tonight.
Yeah. He's like trying to make connections, but he's doing a really bad job of it. He's like, oh, hey, Mikey, I know you have a son, so let me give you this. And he gives him like an SNL rattle, and Mikey's like, oh, great. He's 8, but all right. And then when he's saying goodbye, he like smacks Mikey on the ass, and Ego's like, no, you're not doing that.
Right. And then I think because, he, like you say, he's trying to make friends. He straight up asks people. He asks, I think, Michael Che and Bo and Yang, hey, do you like me? Are we friends?
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's like, yeah, no, man, you're great. I like you. And he's like, oh, I just made my first friend. All right.
Yeah, after 7.5 years on the show. That amused me because I think everybody's been there at one point or another where you just want to be like, hey, do you actually like me? Am I cool?
Yeah, but
you can't do that because there's nothing more uncool than doing that.
Yeah, and plus, no one's going to say, no, I don't like you. They're going to be like, yeah, no, you're great. Their voice is going to go all high.
Yeah, you're fine. Oh, yeah, no. I enjoy you. You're a good guy.
Yeah, you're the best. Wait, what? Oh, yeah. Sorry, I think Lauren's calling me. I got to go. Goodbye.
Yeah, yeah. And we even had a thing where he's speaking to Lauren, but Lauren is off camera. And it didn't sound like the real Lorne Michaels voice. It sounded like just somebody doing a Lorne Michaels impression.
It really did sound like somebody saying, oh, go away, Kyle.
Yeah.
I don't like you. You know, or that was more Alfred Hitchcock, but you get the gist.
No, I get the gist. I get the gist.
Watch that Cut for Time sketch. Like I said before, like everyone hot and cold with Kyle, but this one I actually was like, oh, this is not bad.
I think the Kyle and Friends sketch is worth seeing. I actually preferred it to a lot of what was actually on the show. So
yeah.
Overall.
Wipe out.
This was not a good show, you guys.
Yeah. The Dan Levy or Levy episode I thought was way better than this one. This one, I'm trying to figure out, I'm trying to pinpoint exactly what wasn't great. I mean, the writing, I guess, I felt kind of, a lot of the sketches weren't fully realized or just kind of half written. A lot of the premises were kind of thin. It was a little sloppy too at some point, especially like, you know, camera work here and there. It didn't feel like, it felt more like a kind of a run through than a fully fleshed out show, I think.
Yeah, it just wasn't a very entertaining show, and I hate to say that. I love the Peloton sketch, the Peloton thing. Yeah. I thought that was great. That was terrific. That went into my favorites of the season.
The
rest, I am gonna have to go full Zoidberg on it.
Go for it.
That was bad, and you should feel bad.
Boom. Yay. I agree. Peloton was gold. Che had some good stuff. Everything else was a big old shoulder shrug for me.
Yeah. Swing and a miss. Swing and a miss.
All right. Well, how about the Twitters? We tweeted out about the...
Let's look at the Twitters. Let's see what the Twitter sphere had to say.
All right. Let's look at the old mailbag, gang.
All right. You want it?
I didn't pull it up.
I've got it. I just thought, all right. First we have Ruby the Rube saying, I thought this one was fine. It almost reminded me of an episode from 1993 or 1994 where it has a lower energy and the sketches really take their time with the pacing. And it was a very premise-heavy episode. It's interesting that this cast has barely any recurring characters and they rarely use the ones they do have. The writing style of this era is really different when compared to Seth Meyers or Tina Fey was head writer.
Ooh.
So I think those are some good points. Yeah, they are kind of a little light on recurring characters right now, I think.
Yeah, I think that's something a lot of people have mentioned and brought up. Yeah, like, I mean, they have recurring characters, but they're all on Weekend Update. They're on the Weekend Update desk. Like, all of Heidi's characters, like Bailey Gisbert and whatnot. Or Bowen's character as like Chen Biao. Like we don't
really have too many characters that you build sketches around.
I mean, the only time I remember seeing like a recurring character in a sketch is when they did the SNL at homes, like like when Heidi did her Bailey Gismert character in one of the at home sketches where she did like one of the YouTube videos, and that was a sketch. And I was like, why aren't they? That's actually a really good idea. Why I don't understand why they aren't doing more of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, cause it's, it'd be like a kind of a thing where they had, you know, back in the day where they had, what was it, Horatio Sands and Jimmy Fallon as the two dudes doing, like, the webcam show. So they could
Jared's Room.
Jared's Room, yeah. So they could just do, wanted to just do that, but with YouTube and Bailey Gifford and just have her own show on YouTube.
Yeah, I would like to see, like, a few more recurring sketches. You know, don't run them into the ground, of course, but I feel like maybe part of the reason for that is we've got a mix of people who've been on the show for a really long time, like Keenan or Kate or Cecily or A.D. Bryant at this point. She's been on for quite a while.
Yeah.
Heck, even Kyle. And so, like, a lot of their recurring characters are maybe a little played out or they don't want to do them as much. And we haven't had as many of the newer cast members step up and develop characters, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the only recurring character we have in sketches is Chad, and that's just sad.
Oh, God, that's depressing.
I if you can think of another one, let me know, but yeah, all I can think of is Chad.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, depressed now.
I'm sorry.
Okay, we also had Bill Broski replying to Ruby the Rube. He's at Bill Broski 2620. He says, this is true. I felt like some of the sketches had premises that could have been funnier if they had taken them further or done more with them. I like the idea of the wine sign sketch, but it just didn't escalate and it ended lamely. Agreed. Similarly, the energy of that backstage sketch where they were rattling off names rapid fire almost approached being funny. So he's talking about the 70s green room.
Disco.
Most of this episode was pretty bad, though, I thought. It got off to a bad start with a pretty horrible cold open, boring monologue, and terrible first sketch. Kate's piece on Update was also kind of head-scratchingly awful. On the bright side, Lauren got something to do, I guess.
There you go. I don't disagree with any of that.
No, neither do I. It was a disappointing episode, and which is too bad, because, I mean, we're always rooting for SNL to do a great show. I mean, we want to be blown away. We want to laugh and be amazed at how clever it is and all that, but this, it just wasn't a good show.
We want to live, laugh, and love.
Yeah, but I would put it down more to the writing than anything else.
Yeah, I think the host, Regina King, was, like, more than game for everything. And, like, that I'm always kind of concerned about things like that when they have, like, a host that's known for drama, especially, like, a host who's won awards for drama. Like, how will they... Mm-hmm. How will they adjust to this, you know, sort of sketch comedy type of format? And I thought Regina King did pretty well. She did all right. But yeah, it was...
Yeah, you never really know what you're going to get when it's somebody who's largely a dramatic performer. This was fine. She didn't blow me away. And if she comes back, fine. If not, I'm fine with that too.
Yeah, so. I think it's like you said, this episode was just, the writing was just not there, which is a bummer.
Yeah, which is, it's a shame. Next week on SNL, we got Gene Page. Am I saying that right?
I think it's Reggae Gene Page.
Reggae, okay.
I
copied down the name on the screen. This is not something someone I'm familiar with. The musical guest is Bad Bunny.
Yeah, and like when they announced it on the episode, I think I out loud said, "Who?" And then my wife had to come in and be like, "Oh yeah, no, he's on that show Bridgerton. He's like the
okay.
He's like
I know that Bridgerton is one of the big trendy shows right now.
Yeah, he's like the lead, the male lead, and he's like a hot hunky dude. And like people are saying, oh, he could be the next James Bond type of fella.
Okay.
So like that's his big claim to fame. I mean, he's like one of these actors that's been around for a bit, but you know, I think he's been acting since he was a kid. But, like, Bridgerton is, like, his breakout role. And, like, you know, the ladies love him because he's easy on the eyes. And now he's hosting SNL. I'm not familiar with any of his work, but...
I just looked him up on Wikipedia. He's a British Zimbabwean actor.
Ooh.
He is known for playing Chicken George in the 2016 miniseries Roots.
Oh, wow.
I'd honestly totally forgotten that they'd remade Roots.
That sounds familiar.
From 2018 and 2019, he was a regular cast member on the ABC legal drama For the People. And since 2020, he stars in the Netflix period drama Bridgerton as Simon Bassett, Duke of Hastings. So,
okay. So there's that.
So, yeah, so he's a more recently famous person who's I guess on the trendy side, but
yeah.
Hey, let's see what he does.
Let's give this new kid a shot.
And Bad Bunny, are you familiar with Bad Bunny?
I'm vaguely familiar with him. I know he's like kind of like a Latin rap reggaeton type of guy. So
he is apparently a Puerto Rican rapper.
Ooh, how about that? So. Yeah, it's like big pun. But yeah, he's like I guess he's like a little bit of like yeah, like Latin rapper and a pit bull. I guess that's the best way to describe him. Dale.
All right, so you know, we'll see what they got, and then we got another show after that. I don't believe they've announced who's coming to the show after.
They have not.
Yeah, but we should have two more episodes in this cycle because it was going to be five in a row.
So yeah, so your guess for that episode is as good as ours, but I don't know. Hopefully, the next episode will be a lot better than this one because this one was, oh boy.
Yeah, I'd like to see them bounce back. I'd like to see a return to form.
Absolutely.
So.
And yeah, that's the episode, guys. Thanks again for listening, as always. If you want to, follow us on the Twitter, you can at SNL Nerds Show. We, tweet at us. We will always be quick to respond back. We're good like that. And if you want to follow me on Twitter or Instagram, follow me at Darren Credible. That's D-A-R-I-N Credible.
And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Trumbull Comic, at T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L, and the word comic. And you can follow us on the Nonproductive Network as well, and check out the other shows and contribute to our Patreon.
Yes, do all of those things. Pretty please.
Yes.
Pretty pleased with Sugar Roll on top of it.
And please, if you enjoy the show and you are so inclined, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, because it really does help the show.
Yeah, just don't say we're boring AF, because we already got one of those. So put something nice up, like we're great AF.
Yeah, there you go. Let's counteract that one. Cause...
Right, because the only thing that destroys hate is love.
Very true.
See, Valentine's Day brought it all back. See what I did
there? There you go. We came full circle.
Yeah.
Came full circle. You did it, buddy.
Love is love.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week, guys. So until then, nerds out.
This has been a Nonproductive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Nonproductive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.